Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and today is the first day back from last week's break for public school students and teachers. Being off with my public school kid was why I was off last week, and it's the first day back since the controversial ratings of roughly 18,000 New York City public school teachers were released on Friday. So it's a big Monday. The New York Times and WNYC, through our school book project, have been reporting on the data and hearing back from teachers on their reports. Union leaders and school officials have been weighing in on the data release. There's a big full-page ad in, let's see, which paper am I holding here? It's the Post on Friday. This is no way to rate a teacher. Maybe you know about this controversy. Maybe you know you can actually look up published ratings on many of your New York City school children's actual teachers. So parents, the phone lines are open for you now. Have you looked up the report on your child's teacher? And if so, what did you find? There's been a lot of discussion about the methodology for these reports. Did they tell you anything that you felt informed you about teacher evaluations and why they were released? Did you find, when you checked them, anything that really helps you understand what's going on with your kid's education? Did they confirm or refute what you thought about your child's teacher? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Give us a call with any of that. And if you haven't checked, call in and tell us why you're holding off. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And joining me now, as your calls are coming in, to discuss the data and what parents are learning and how they're reacting to it over this first weekend of availability, is Rob Gebeloff, New York Times Database Projects Editor. Hey, Rob, welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, good morning.
So we've been reporting on some of the data all weekend. The big headline seems to be the teachers with high ratings are found at schools all over the city. What does the data tell you in that respect?
Well, I think the one of the goals of the people who build models that build that create data like this is not to just create a system where the kids with the highest test scores and their teachers get the highest ratings. So the system is intended to sort of level the playing field and say, for every teacher, based on the students that are in their classroom, what would be a reasonable expectation of their test scores, and then it measures, you know, how the students of that teacher actually did compare to the expectations, and assumes that the teacher is responsible for whether the scores are higher or lower than expectations. So that immediately sets the stage for, well, how do you know what the expectations are? And, you know, in the deeper level, it also gets into the question of what do test scores really tell you in the first place?
And ratings for teachers and for schools are available through a widget that we have on the schoolbook website, schoolbook.org, and users can search by school to see the ratings and what they mean. You can search by teachers' names. And parents, if you have used schoolbook or any other tool to actually look up any teachers over the weekend, give us a call. We don't really want to talk about any teachers by name, to be perfectly honest. What we really want to do is talk about what you saw and what you make of it, if you even bothered to do it. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Rob, I'll talk about my own experience here. I did a little of this over the weekend. I looked up some of my kids' past and present teachers, and the whole thing so far has left me more numb and confused than informed. One elementary school teacher who got graded highly in language arts but lower in math, for example, I thought, yes, that's exactly what I thought of that teacher. This makes sense. But then one of my kids' middle school math teachers, who I thought was excellent, got a very low grade, and it showed some new data about the teacher, but also left me skeptical about the meaningfulness of the number. So I was left more confused than informed. And I wonder if you're hearing a lot of that.
Yes, I think we've heard from a lot of educators who don't believe that we should have posted the ratings to begin with. But I would say this. I mean, this is not going away, this type of analysis or this type of measurement of teachers. And so getting this out there so people can sort of understand what's going on, I think, still serves a purpose. And one of the ongoing controversies and what you may be running into is how accurately is the model able to set what the expectations are for a teacher. I mean, it's the math they're using is pretty sophisticated, but even the most sophisticated math still carries with it a margin of error. Now, one of the things that will be very interesting going forward, as you know, the Los Angeles Times did a version of this a couple years ago. In New York now, this has become public. We're getting to a point now in the history of these value-added studies of how well does theory jibe with reality. So, you know, there's a theoretical margin of error, and then there's the Brian Lehrer margin of error, and all the parents out there, when they start to see these, to sort of give feedback as to how well are these systems actually doing.
Let's talk to a parent. Marjorie in East New York, you're on WNYC. Thanks a lot for calling in. Hi.
Hi, I'm actually in the East Village.
Oh, East Village, I'm sorry.
No worries.
So, what'd you do?
So, I looked up my daughter's teacher, and she was straight up average across the board, which is not what I think about her as a teacher. I think she's terrific, and my daughter thinks she's terrific. But my kid goes to a really small school, which I think we all agree is good for kids learning. And then when you have tiny numbers of kids taking the tests, tiny little fluctuations in test scores are going to have huge impacts. And that's just silly. It's silly to punish teachers or reward teachers according to those kind of metrics.
And, Rob, there is a sophisticated thing that the teachers and the city just negotiated, right, as to how these metrics would actually be used in the larger scheme of an evaluation.
Because this using multiple kinds of evaluation is great, and looking at kids' work and portfolios and how they grow and develop over time. And also, you know, I like that my kid's teacher really thinks about sort of the moral aspect of growing up and how to be a good person, and that comes through in the education too.
Marjorie, thank you very much. And she makes a great point, Rob. There's no way that nobody's measuring how good a teacher is at moral education in these metrics that are out that are based on the standardized tests, right?
Yeah. Yes, the standardized tests are, I mean, I think another way of looking at these ratings is literally it's measuring how well the teacher did in this one very specific area of moving the standardized test scores. You know, another point to bring up is if you look at the history of standardized testing, I mean, they were not invented as an evaluation tool at all. I mean, they were invented sort of to be the teacher's friend and to provide guidance as to what areas the teacher was doing well in and not, but mostly to say, hey, we need to work more on this subject or cover this subject. So, you know, all these questions are definitely fair play, but you know, again, I can't up and emphasize that no one, you know, it's the news media that's reporting this, we're not advocating that this is the be-all and end-all of how to rate teachers. It's just that this has become a part of modern education, and we want to, as best as possible, expose what's really going on so people can be more informed about how these systems work.
Let's talk to a teacher calling in, Adam in Center Reach. You're on WNYC. Hello, Adam.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you do?
So, yeah, I definitely agree with what some of the other callers have been saying. I think one important thing to highlight is the method of evaluation, I think, is inherently flawed. I mean, you take into account that the standardized testing already has so many problems associated with it, and then you're going to now measure a teacher based on the student's test score. That's already flawed to begin with. You know, the scores themselves don't reflect students' achievement, so how could they possibly reflect a teacher's achievement? And I think that the problem that I have with this whole thing, you know, the whole evaluation system, is not necessarily that teachers are being evaluated. I think that's a misconception. I think it's more that teachers don't want to be looked at as their failure is being measured, not their success. You know, if the student doesn't get a 65, they fail, but it doesn't measure the fact that the teacher might have pushed the student a whole reading level up during that course of the year, even if they didn't get a 65. And there's actually a Republican governor, I can't remember off the top of my head, in the Rust Belt area, and he proposes that teachers be evaluated based on their students' progress, not necessarily what scores they get. And I think that's a very good direction to move in because, you know, students from all backgrounds and all abilities come into your classroom, and there's no way to really, you know, well, it's very difficult, at least, to try to get them all on the same page.
Let me push it for a second, though, Adam, from the administration's point of view. I gather you're a teacher. And so they would say, well, if you look year to year at kids who are traveling as a class,
yeah,
and they do generally X percentile on the fourth grade standardized tests,
mm-hmm.
and then they come into fifth grade, and when they go to fifth grade teacher A's class, they tend to do better on the standardized test than they did in fourth grade. But when
mm-hmm.
they go to fifth grade teacher B's class, they tend to do worse than they did in fourth grade. And if you see that over time, then does it not tell you something meaningful to know about the difference between the two teachers?
Right. Well, I think what's important, I definitely agree, but I think what's important here is to look at not all those fourth graders, well, at least in many cases, not all those fourth graders were on the same level before they approached fifth grade. And so, for example, like a special ed teacher might have turned around an entire student's reading level, for example, but that doesn't reflect what's being measured, essentially. I do agree with what you're saying, though.
Right. And Adam, we're going to leave it there. And I appreciate your call very much. And Rob Gebeloff, New York Times Database Projects Editor, what did you want to say about that?
Yeah, just to clarify what that caller said is that the system actually attempts to account for what he's talking about. If like I'm in a school and I'm teaching the gifted class and you're teaching the traditional class, the bar for me is going to be set higher. So I'm going to be expected, my students are going to be expected to score higher than your students for me to get a good grade. And the other thing I think that's very interesting about this discussion and a lot of the feedback we're getting are people are saying, well, the margin of error is so wide, how meaningful is this? I think one of the ways to look at this is no one intends the system to be used to measure whether a teacher in the 60th percentile is 10 points better than the teacher in the 50th percentile. I think at the end of the day, what they're really trying to do is over time try and find teachers where the pattern is very strong at one end or the other, and where they can come up with a teacher that really needs help or intervention or a teacher that's truly outstanding. I think this business about, and one of the problems mm-hmm. that we're having with the early stages of the data is people too much want to focus on, well, some teacher was in the 69th percentile this year and the 49th percentile the next year. How could that be a reliable system?
Right.
And
John, a teacher, left this comment on School Book. We noticed he wrote, last year I had 3 ninth grade biology classes in which around 50% of the students failed. The year before that, the failure rate was 33%. This year, it's only 25%. I work to improve my curriculum and my skills every year, but essentially it's the same program. So what is the major variable? Yep, it's the students. So that's another teacher critique. We're just about out of time with this for today. But what do you recommend? I mean, I realize you're a database guy, but what do you recommend to parents who may be curious enough in the coming days to look up their own children's teachers' ratings? What do you recommend to them in terms of what to make of it?
Well, I think the first thing is to answer the question is, do the ratings reflect what I feel about the teacher? And then to keep that in mind, as you're going to hear about this constantly over at the federal level and at the local level, we want to have some form of these ratings be part of, the accountability movement in education. And hopefully this will give you a better understanding now of what that really means by actually seeing the ratings for teachers you know.
All right. Rob Gebeloff, New York Times Database Projects Editor. And listeners, you can read analysis of these ratings, read the politics, read some in-depth breakdown of what they mean and what they don't mean, and you can also look up teachers at our WNYC, New York Times, New York City Public Education website, schoolbook.org. Rob, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the Bronx Borough President, Ruben Diaz. Stay with us.